We are going to tally some things up today. Things to be thankful for economically, and some things not. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Wednesday, today, 25 November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We got a whole cornucopia of economic indicators this morning ahead of Thanksgiving, some of which are worth being thankful for, as I said. Durable goods orders were a bit stronger than expected. So, too, were new home sales and consumer spending. Others, not so great. There were more first-time claims for unemployment than expected, and all in all, and as we've been telling you, more than 20 million Americans are still getting some kind of government joblessness help. And here's the thing about that. There is no sign that relief is coming from Congress for this economy. And that means that for millions of people, sometime between Christmas Day and the end of the year, a whole raft of emergency programs that were put into place back in March are going to end. They're going to be done. They're going to be over. So throughout the program today, Marketplace's Justin Ho is going to take us through some of the programs that are going to be ending and what that is likely to do to this economy.
Two programs for the unemployed with a huge dollar impact on the economy are going away on December 26th. I'm talking about pandemic unemployment assistance, meant for people who don't qualify for regular unemployment insurance, say gig workers and part-timers, and also pandemic emergency unemployment compensation, which keeps benefits going after people use up all of their regular state unemployment insurance. An estimate by the Century Foundation found that when those programs expire, the economy will lose about $2.5 billion a week, and 12 million Americans will lose their benefits. In normal times, that would force them to rely on non-cash relief. But some of those programs are going away, too.
Those programs are going away. Justin is not back a couple more times. He will be before we are done with more on what is not going to be happening in this economy come the end of the year. We will, though, continue with the idea of what Justin was talking about, that the economic pain of this pandemic and the recovery, such as it is, aren't being distributed evenly. There was more evidence of that today in two of the items in that government data cornucopia that I started with. Higher unemployment claims, which is to say people losing their jobs, is a sign that rising virus counts are hurting the economy still. But higher orders for durable goods is evidence that at least somebody out there is still shopping for big-ticket items. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams reports on that dichotomy and this economy.
Durable goods orders are up more than 1% from last month, but still down 9% from last year, says Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Randomly, he's a perfect example of why durable goods numbers keep improving.
The only thing I was expecting this afternoon was a washing machine delivery, speaking of durable goods, because our old one broke.
Machines do break and need replacing. Families and schools need more computers for remote learning. Beth Livingston teaches business at the University of Iowa.
I think that's one thing that has happened over the last 6 months is that we have a much better grasp on what demand looks like in this sort of pandemic economy.
And it doesn't look good for in-person services. Shilpa Tamala owns a shrinking chain of hair removal salons on the East Coast.
We had 8 locations and we were growing before the pandemic, and we're at 5 locations and maybe even we'll have to go down to 4.
Tamala says revenues are down by half. She had to switch most of her employees to part-time and she's exhausted.
I always felt like I could work a little bit harder to be able to provide for everyone as part of the company. And I think I can't work any harder to make it happen. I just have to kind of wait and see and hope things turn around.
Tamala is also frustrated with political leaders for leaving her and her employees to the mercy of the pandemic. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
We are going to go back to that data cornucopia one more time, because why not beat a metaphor all the way down, right? But we're going to point out that consumer spending was up last month, though not as up as it was in September, so a sign of a slowing recovery. And as we enter the holiday shopping season, how much consumers spend matters more than ever, and it matters especially for small business retailers in this economy. So we're going to follow 3 of them over the holidays to see how they are doing in this year unlike any other. First up,
My name is Annie Lang Hartman. I own Compass Paper Company, which is a stationery and gift brand, and we are based in Leelanau County, Michigan. Compass Paper Company has been in business for a little over 5 years now. Around March 15th, when things were really starting to shut down, 90% of our spring and summer orders were canceled, and we needed to shift to focusing on our regular everyday customers. We went up 750% in those sales this year, which is a really big deal. But this year we went in having a plan of adding, you know, 6 or 7 employees, and that kind of went out the window. And it's just everything feels uncertain right now. So any sale that we get is just feels good, no matter how big or small.
Annie Lang Hartman there in Leelanau County, Michigan. Two more small business retailers coming up later on in the program. On Wall Street today, capping a short week, some up, some down, which is kind of the way it goes most days. Stocks close tomorrow, by the way, half day on Friday. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Okay, let's pick up again with Justin Ho. Remember, his assignment today, which he chose to accept, was what happens in this economy when the emergency pandemic relief programs Congress passed back in March end, as it looks like they are going to do.
Ever since May, the Agriculture Department's been running a food box program where farmers package up meat, dairy, and vegetables for distribution to people who are facing food insecurity during the pandemic. So far, it's delivered around 120 million boxes, roughly $4 billion worth of food. But that program's set to expire at the end of the year, too, even though food insecurity isn't going anywhere. It affected around 35 million people before the pandemic, according to the USDA. The nonprofit Feeding America found that the COVID crisis could make that number rise to more than 50 million.
Couple of more case studies coming from Justin in just a little bit. But hey, while I have you, David is off tomorrow. Sabri is working the early shift. The Marketplace Morning Report, everything you need to know to start your economic day. Tomorrow, no matter how it looks or feels where you are, is Thanksgiving. And there are some old standbys, some go-tos on that day. Macy's has hosted a Thanksgiving Day parade in New York, floats and performances and Santa Claus at the end. And of course, those big giant balloons for almost 100 years now. Something like it is still going to happen this year. Scaled way back, no live crowds, not exactly a parade. But the big balloons are still going to be there, which gets me at long last, to the point of this next story. Helium, which fills those big balloons, has been in short supply for years now. But as Marketplace's Erica Barris explains, thanks to this pandemic, not so scarce anymore.
The giant Thanksgiving Day parade balloons are filled with a mix of helium and air, so no worries there. But other industries and businesses use this non-renewable resource. Semiconductor manufacturing, MRIs, rocket engines. Helium is also used in science research. Bill Halperin is a physicist at Northwestern University. 5 years ago, he says he was paying $4.50 for a liter of helium. Then there were a few shortages, and at the beginning of 2020, he started paying $12 a liter.
Because there are very few providers, they can decide if they want to increase the price or not.
And that was before COVID-19 jammed up supply chains. With only 14 active helium plants in the world and a handful of suppliers in the U.S., shortages happen often and helium prices fluctuate. Sophia Hayes is a chemist at Washington University in St. Louis. She uses helium in her labs. And the prices are set years in advance by contract. So she had what she needed.
While we weren't able to do research, we had to keep, taking care of the care and feeding of these pieces of equipment by continuing to go in and supply them with helium.
But when COVID-19 hit, everything from birthday parties to MRIs were canceled, and global demand for helium went down by 25%. Helium industry consultant Phil Kornbluth says,
the shortage quickly came to an end, and it actually turned to a bit of a surplus.
In the U.S., helium is stored at an underground Federal Reserve. It's set to be shut down or sold next year, and that may mean more price uncertainty ahead. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
We've spent some time on the phone the past couple of days talking to small business owners, retailers, about how this holiday season is looking for them in this corona economy. Next up, Phoenix, Arizona.
My name is Rue Newby. My company is Label by Three. Label by Three is a sustainable clothing company that I started with my sisters 2 years ago. This holiday season, we have scaled back on like the stock that we have and the items that we plan to make just to be on the safe side. We'd rather have too little than too much. We're excited to still be, you know, planning all these things, all the holiday stuff that we typically plan. It is busy, so it's lots of just like to-do lists and did you get this done? Did you get that done? There is a tone of nervousness, but I think we're trying to just focus on staying positive and just taking it day by day and week by week.
Rue Newby, proprietor of Label by Three out of Phoenix, Arizona. Coming up.
They can't get their hands on it. They can't get their hands dirty.
Which makes education tricky when getting your hands on is the whole idea. But first, sure, why not? Let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials gave back 173 points today, about a half percent, 29,872. The NASDAQ up 57 points, 0.4%, 12,904. S&P 500 dipped 5, a tenth percent, 36.29. The Wall Street Journal reports Salesforce is in advanced talks to buy Slack, the workplace instant messaging platform. Slack has a market value of about $17 billion. Thus would be the biggest acquisition ever for Salesforce, which makes software to help businesses manage their customers. Slack up 37% today. Salesforce down 5.3%. Slack, by the way, don't get me started. Prices for farmers' crops have been rising, which means farmers are buying more heavy equipment, which means heavy equipment maker Deere is benefiting. Deere easily topped expectations for earnings and revenue. And yet, because capitalism, shares down 1.9%. Today you're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We have had Justin Ho so far on unemployment relief programs ending and food relief programs ending. And now, in the absence of new relief from Congress, of which there is no sign, literally, the roof over your head. Here you go.
Right now, landlords nationwide cannot evict people who haven't been able to pay their rent during the crisis. That's thanks to an eviction moratorium put in place by the Centers for Disease Control. But it ends on December 31st. Some estimates have found that between 7 and 14 million people will be at risk of eviction when that happens. The National Low Income Housing Coalition estimates that the cost of evicting these people and the toll on social services could end up being $130 billion. Now, some cities and states have their own eviction bans in place, but others have let theirs expire.
One of the weird things about this pandemic, one of the many weird things, really, is that so much has changed in our day-to-day, but even more has changed that we don't even notice because we're not going into the office or spending very much time in stores. And then somebody points it out and you're like, oh, yeah, of course. I mean, remember those big boxes that would be in just about every office lobby and stores right about now filled with unwrapped toys? Or all those events where the price of admission would be, yes, an unwrapped toy or a donation. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab looks into the pandemic logistics of the toy drive.
Toy drives are all about giving and receiving. But to get millions of toys to millions of needy kids, a lot needs to happen in the middle. At the Coalition for the Homeless in New York City, the middle now includes unboxing a mountain of deliveries.
So I am opening up these packages. Spirograph. Arts and craft project for the kids, which is really awesome. Keeps them engaged.
Elizabeth Morales is the coalition's community outreach coordinator. She's also stacking up Legos and jewelry making kits and little LOL surprise dolls that come with mystery accessories. Normally, teams of volunteers would be tackling the cardboard mountain, but social distancing means only 4 people can be in the room at a time. So
now I'm the head elf. And I'm ecstatic. I'm excited for this.
Last year, the coalition distributed 12,000 toys. This year, there are only enough elves to process around 7,000, and they're all coming from online donations. All those unwrapped toys typically collected at office buildings throughout the city, not safe during a pandemic. Sarah Murphy is the director of development.
It really wasn't a matter of, are we going to get enough toys? It was really a matter of, how can we get enough people here to make sure that we can do this safely?
Ted Sylvester has a people problem of a different kind. He's vice president of marketing at Toys for Tots, the mother of all toy drives. The Marines run it, and last year it took in $160 million worth of donated toys, one person at a time.
The meat and potatoes of the program is the community action part, you know, the community dropping one toy in at a time in our you know, toy collection bins.
But with a lot fewer shoppers and stores, it's been harder to collect.
We do expect local toy drives to be significantly impacted, while simultaneously we are already seeing a lot more requests from families, you know, more so now than in a normal year, because of the so many people are still laid off and furloughed from their employment.
So this year, Toys for Tots is looking to toy companies like Hasbro to donate toys and focusing on boosting cash donations from big corporations. Smaller toy drives may not have an in with the Fortune 500. But locally, they're connected. Lisa Bonisi runs the Richard Gardner Jr. Memorial Toy Drive in memory of her brother. She's been operating out of her home in Staten Island for 26 years.
You know what's funny? Every year, by this time, I have parties booked. I have everything is lined up and already put on the calendar.
But this year, people are overwhelmed, and she's having a hard time just getting them on the phone.
The first Saturday in December, we have our annual toy drive night at Castleton Corners Pub. And normally we would bring in 100 people. We walk away with almost 200 toys from that night.
With capacity restrictions and the city on the verge of new shutdowns, a toy happy hour may not be possible.
I have nothing done. There's nothing booked. There's nothing planned.
Benisi still has a bunch of toys left over from last year, and she's determined to figure it out.
I don't even know where I'm going with this yet. I have to make it work. I have to make it work no matter what.
And making it work is kind of what the holidays are about this year. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Speaking of toys, as Kristen just was, the last stop in our admittedly brief survey of small business retail in this pandemic holiday season is a brick and mortar toy store.
My name is Irene Kesselman. I am the owner of Alley Cat Toys and Books, located in Carrboro, North Carolina. We have been in existence for over 30 years. I have owned the store for 7. Today, we are doing whatever we can to capture our business. It is clearly the most critical time of the year. We are offering private shopping appointments, and we are also doing local deliveries, where I will literally get in my car and drive to bring the gift to the customer. I usually have my seasonal buying done by, I would say, August. And this year, not knowing what to expect, I leave here and I go home and I look at sales and I write orders at night based on what we sold that day. I'm really depending on my gut this year. I've always done well with going by my gut, but this year in particular, every day is different.
Irene Kesselman there in Carrboro, North Carolina. We're going to check back in with her and Annie Lang Hartman and Rue Newby in a couple of weeks. These are, well, what is the word? Tricky, difficult, confusing times in education. Schools are in session virtually and or physically, but there's a whole lot of what's happening in schools that is out of those schools' control. So with that as a loose theme, on now to Detroit, to the Randolph Career and Technical Center. We've got that school's principal, Krista McKinney-King, on the phone to see what technical education looks like in a pandemic. Dr. McKinney-King, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Now, we should tell people we had this interview scheduled originally for a couple of days ago and had to reschedule because some of the stay-at-home orders and what you could do in school orders changed in Michigan, which makes this first question all the more relevant. You're kind of not in charge of what happens in your school, are you?
No, I had to be very flexible. We kind of just roll with it. You know, fortunately, we rescheduled, but it was the result of the district suspending face-to-face learning.
Well, look, what does that do to you as you're running a career and technical education center where almost by definition it's more hands-on than other kinds of education?
So what has happened really since the beginning of the school year, students and their families had a choice as to whether or not they wanted to participate in face-to-face or virtual learning. And an overwhelming number of our high school students selected virtual. Mm-hmm. What has happened is that my welding instructor or even my carpentry instructor will provide a YouTube video based upon a specific task. But you're absolutely right. They can't get their hands on it. They can't get their hands dirty. And trust and believe, they're anxiously awaiting to do that.
Have you seen since the pandemic started, right? So we had last spring and everybody went online in a hurry and it was of varying qualities, I'm sure. Then the summer was mostly off. And then in the fall semester, did you see increased demand for your courses and your specialties?
You know, I would love to say yes, only because when you think about that whole college and career pathways, you know, you have a lot of kids who are in college, but they're learning online. Mm-hmm. And so you have parents who are kind of like, oh my gosh, I'm paying all this money for my kid to still be at home learning, right? And then you would think that perhaps the whole, for me, the skilled trades industry would be more prominent. And so what we have done, we've done our best to capitalize on that and to really, you know, reiterate the importance of gaining a skill, finance your college education. So I can say we continue to have those conversations. I cannot say I've seen a true increase.
Well, yeah. So let's play that out just as a last item here. Let's pretend we're on the other side of this thing. And let's just, for argument's sake, be a little pessimistic and say it's next fall or even maybe early next winter. What does Randolph Career Center look like? And what does your field look like in terms of the services you're providing, post-pandemic?
I've already started to think about my theme for next year, and it's probably going to be Randolph Reset. And so what I would want to do post-pandemic is make sure that I lift up this whole notion of digital literacy, continue to lift up the professional development that is needed for my teachers. Again, I'm already thinking forward. I'm positive. I think it was just an opportunity to allow students to consider even more post-secondary options.
Right. Kristen McKinney-King, she is the principal at Randolph Career and Technical Center. They are in Detroit. Ms. McKinney-King, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
One last pass from Justin Ho now at the economic cliff we are looking at in almost exactly a month if Congress keeps on deciding not to do anything on pandemic relief.
Throughout the pandemic, people with federal student loans haven't had to make payments, and interest hasn't been accruing on those loans. All of that ends on December 31st. Tens of millions of people will be on the hook for payments. A couple other deadlines are coming up at the end of the year. Expanded tax credits for small businesses so they can provide their employees with paid sick leave will expire. And state and local governments have until the end of the year to spend federal money earmarked for COVID-19 expenses. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
We finally let him stop reporting that spot. Longest elapsed time, I think, right? This final note on the way out today, kind of a coda to Justin's theme of help coming for this economy. None from Congress, as we know. And Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, as we told you last week, has decided the Federal Reserve has to end some of its big relief programs as the Trump administration departs. But from the minutes of the Fed's most recent meeting released today, the meeting was about 3 weeks ago, here is this quote. A few participants, the minutes say, noted that it was important to extend them, those relief programs, that is, beyond year end. Janet Yellen on the hook for this decision if she gets confirmed in about, 2 months, right? Crammed a lot of stuff in the show today. You got to find your own moment of economic context because we're out of here. Our media production team is Robin Edgar, Drew Jostad, Jeff Peters, Daniel Ramirez, Jay Siebold, Charlton Thorpe, Ben Tolliday, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdal. Have yourselves a great Thanksgiving. Amy Scott's working tomorrow. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.